Here it is. Okay, so our regular opening IP note is that anybody can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any work items must be members of the CCG with IPR agreements signed. So please, if you're going to contribute technically to our work, ensure that you have a W3C account and sign the W3C community contributor license. Otherwise, everybody can participate in these calls. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are being archived, so be aware that what you say and do will be recorded. We use IRC accused speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, you can type Q plus to add yourself to the queue. This is how we manage who speaks and when. Please be brief for the so that the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. We hold this meeting by voice, not by IRC, so we really want to keep off-topic IRC comments to a minimum. We work hard to manage a single thread of conversation to make it easy for people listening in or reading the minutes to understand what we are talking about. Please respect this group process. We have a scribe today. Thank you very much, Dimitri. We always are appreciating everybody's help and taking turns in scribing. Is there anybody new today who's not been at our one of our meetings before? Anybody new to our calls? Okay, I don't see anybody new. Now I'm going to go to the scribe. Okay, so I see a few people who haven't been reintroduced for a while, but are they here today? Nope. Kim, are you on today?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep. The agenda while we've been waiting. I'm at the reintroductions phase.
And, okay, yeah, great. I have problems with OnSIP, so.
No problem, we saw it. So I was just calling to see if Kim was available for reintroduction, and otherwise I'm going down the list.
Okay. She accidentally hung up, so.
Okay. See. Brent, are you on? Actually, Dimitri, it looks like you're pretty high up on that list, and I know you're scribing today, so I will scribe for a moment while you reintroduce yourself.
Sure thing. So,
and then I'll turn it over to Joe.
No problem. So Dimitri Zagadulin, software engineer in the decentralized identity and credential space, working with Digital Bazaar on DIP resolver libraries, verifiable credential libraries, some specs, and so on. Alum of the MIT Solid Project, and currently involved in other decentralized personal data store projects. Also a co-editor of the DID web DID method spec. There, that's it.
Okay. Take over.
Okay, so that was introduction to reintroductions, announcements, and reminders. So Rebuilding Web of Trust is in about a month. So hopefully if you're coming to that, you've gotten tickets. If not, there's still an opportunity at rwat10.eventbrite.com. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me or Chris. We also have the continuing DID resolution calls on Thursday. Is that correct that it's a 90-minute call? I think we had it as a two-hour call, but it's 90-minute. Is it just an hour? Is it still 90 minutes? For some reason, I'm not convinced our what's there is accurate.
It's only 60 minutes now.
It is 60. Okay, so we'll update that. Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate that. And then I did want to, Adrian, are you, I see you in IRC, are you on the call?
Yes, I
Adrian.
Am.
Okay, great. I would appreciate if you dropped the link that you emailed me with the NIST special publication on zero trust architectures.
Sure.
And I'm putting this in announcements and reminders because it includes – it's an interesting paper. It's related to a lot of the stuff, sort of the general category of things people in this group are working on. And there's an opportunity for public comment. So the announcement is, hey, if you care about this stuff, read this publication from NIST and potentially comment on it. And I'll give Adrian a chance to get that URL in the IRC. Okay, and then next up will be our action items. And thank you, Chris, for curating that last night. Here's the link to our GitHub where we track these sorts of things. We just have two to talk about today. Number one, SIP is not working. Chris, I think you just put an update in here. You want to discuss it?
Yeah, so a number of us are being challenged by making SIP work on various platforms. I had it working for a while, and then the app changed. I use a Mac. When I was in Prague, I tried to use SIP on the phone, and it didn't work. So I know some people are successfully using it on various platforms, and I would really appreciate if we can get some people to write up, you know, what they've got working, any little tricks that they've overcome. Right now, Digital Bazaar pays for the phone bridge for whenever we call in directly, which is very generous of them, but we want to try to keep that to a minimum. So I'm hoping that we can get some volunteers to work on puzzling through some of these SIP things. I know Amy had said that she'd figured out how to make it work on whatever her platform is, et cetera. So this is a great introductory thing. If you've got SIP working or would like to learn about it and document it, we really could use your help. That's it.
Chris, didn't we used to have a blurb somewhere? Maybe we could pull that up and start with that as a document. If we had something written up, I would add, you know, a paragraph or so about what I'm doing with Windows. So maybe the first task is to get a document in a repo that we could iterate on together.
Kim had something at some point. I don't remember where it went. Or it could be we just have the paper.
Yeah. I did, but whatever I was doing stopped working, so then I did not. Yeah, so I think I ended up deleting it because it was just confusing people.
Yeah, that sounds right, because I think I was using yours for a while.
So quick question, where would be a good place to place it? Like a shared Google Doc or on our repo?
Well, ultimately on our repo, in the, you know, we have on our homepage the link to all the different kinds of things you need to do a call or, you know, do these meetings and such. So ultimately should go there, but in the short term as a Google Doc while we draft these would be useful.
Thank you, Kim. Kim, you're on the queue, so go ahead. I see the URL you shared.
Yeah, I was just going to add that this is where a good place to put instructions. And actually, it does look like I kept my old instructions. I was using LinPhone at the time, so I did not delete it. But anything, I think when I stopped using this, it was because I don't know, something about LinPhone. I kept getting calls while I was on this call, or it kept disconnecting. It was a very strange experience. So in any case, feel free to overwrite anything in this audio section.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Kim. I'm going to drop that URL into the issue. Okay. Anything else on that issue? I don't think there's anyone on the queue. So the second issue was, excuse me, the Crypto Suite specifications. I see, Kim, you're the one assigned to that.
Yeah,
but Chris, you commented 14 hours ago, so Chris may have more timely.
Well, it was just that there was a suggestion to close it, but I felt like the information that Ori had put into the issue would disappear if we close it. So we need to have a discussion about how do we capture some of these things about implementations and where to find things. So
okay.
This is yet again something that should probably go into the into the repo that has our homepage as a linked item. And I was going to suggest if Ori could, since he was the one who last wrote up some things about answers to this, might give us a first pass.
Right. So,
links and stuff.
So Ori just closed this, and he put in a link to the Crypto Suite registry. Does that address what you were looking for, Chris? Or are you suggesting we link to that registry in a more prominent place?
Well, the latter is certainly useful, but what I was really interested in was the implementations, some of which don't, which are different than the registries. So the registry sometimes does point to a repo with that lists an implementation, but usually there are other implementations as well, and the registry isn't quite the right purpose for this. What I want to do is be able to tell somebody new to the CCG or new to these different sort of technical things, hey, there's a reference implementation, encourage other people, not a reference, an implementation of this, encourage other people to do so. So I also wrote this down as another kind of great way to volunteer and show leadership by something small in scope to help us, keep the community rolling.
Okay,
big responsibility.
I see Manu's on the queue. Go ahead, Manu.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight that there's a lot of stuff happening with the crypto suites now, thanks to Ori really diving in and trying to reorganize them in a way that works for the various communities. So it's not necessarily about this issue. It's related to it. But it's just kind of an announcement to the group that there's a lot of work happening in this space right now, and it's very active. We're trying to figure out how the security context and the registries and all that kind of stuff work with the DID core working group or the DID working group. And just be aware that there's a lot of stuff happening. So if you're interested in tracking this, track the DID core registry repo. I'm expecting a lot of work. I'm getting that link right now to happen there through pull requests. So keep an eye. Keep an eye on what's happening here. That link in IRC, because there's a lot of discussion there. Is going to result in this specific issue being resolved over the next couple of months. And that's it.
Okay, great. Thanks, Manu. So, Chris, go ahead. You might be muted, Chris.
Sorry. I think that...
Oh, no, I think he dropped just as he started. Okay, well, I want to know, so Ori did mention in the IRC that...
Sorry.
Welcome back, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I think there the work that's going on in the core registries and things of that nature is fabulous. More I wanted to suggest and all the things about sort of a software engineer and running a CC or other
Chris, you are breaking up really bad. We're not getting complete sentences right now.
Okay. Let me see if I can address that.
The last thing we heard was...
Like have a,
go ahead.
I'd just like to see us, have somebody who's interested in just, being a list master for... implementations and repos and other things that might be of use to an engineer arriving at the CCG who might want to implement some of this work. Right now, we don't have a graceful, entry point for that. So I think it would be a great new task for...
That was awesome again. Okay, so obviously Chris is having some problems with his connection. Ori, I did see that you mentioned the Crypto Suite registry links to implementations. I'm actually not seeing that on the page. So I do see a bit of the gap Chris is trying to get addressed. I'm not sure it's this initial issue, though. Someone's dog should be muted. Thank you, whoever that is. Nothing against the dog. So I'm going to ask Chris to consider a different, raise a different issue. So the specifications are there. The specifications are in the linked data registry. The registry links to all the specifications. What I hear Chris asking for is someone to help curate a list of implementations. Especially open source implementations according to those specs. So I guess the action item here is for Chris to potentially raise another issue. Okay, great. Thanks, Chris. And so Dimitri, if you could just get that in there as an action for Chris to possibly raise an issue. And then I think this can stay closed. Unless there are objections to that, or you close it, and it looks like that was appropriate to my eyes, unless anyone wants to speak up to reopen it. Okay, so that sounds good. All right, so that's it for the front matter. Next up, we're gonna do a technical talk. So this was a talk I gave last month, which was triggered by a conversation about what's the capability and why aren't we just using credentials? And my initial response to that seemed to capture something that was concise and cogent. So I turned it into an approximately 25-minute talk. So I'm going to walk you guys through that. Part of this is... And Chris, here, let me give the link to the PowerPoint. Chris, before I do that, I believe we're scheduled next week for a discussion about capabilities using Lightning Network and Macaroons. Could you speak to that a bit? Because to my mind, this is sort of a precursor of, okay, we just standardized verifiable credentials. There are lots of things you could do with verifiable credentials, including statements of authorization. But a lot of us in this community don't necessarily like that approach for a number of reasons. So why would we use capabilities is sort of the first question. What type of capabilities, what implementation or what technical features is a very open issue. There are different things going on. So I'm going to introduce that. But Chris, what is it that's on our schedule for next week?
Yeah, so we have someone who's done a very interesting demo using the Lightning Network. If you're not familiar with Lightning, it's a payment channel for microcurrency, leveraging Bitcoin. And there's a new capability to have macaroons that can offer sort of bearer authority to read a news article or pay for something or to read something, et cetera, that can be tied to this payment network. It leverages something very similar to Zcaps called macaroons. There are some opportunities to make it atomically cross-swappable, I guess. I'm not sure what the right word is, but it's, you know, an atomic operation where the payment literally gives you the right for the bearer token to work. You don't have to go to an authority to say, well, I've paid, so give me authority. Literally paying gives you the authority that, you know, you had requested previously. So I felt like that was a very relevant to our kind of broader architectures, what might be, you know, either a future version of Zcaps as a standard or, you know, something that's combined or whatever. So that's it.
Okay, great. Thanks, Chris. So I'm going to walk us through this presentation. Hopefully, it'll be about 25 minutes or so. I'm going to go very quickly. Feel free to get on the queue. I'll probably just address that at the end.
Hey, real quick comments, Skype comment. Christopher, can you post a link to what macaroons are and to the Lightning Network talk if there is one? Thanks.
Yeah, Joe, I'm getting a 404 on that PowerPoint.
Shoot, what did I do wrong on there? Let me get there from the other way. Thanks, Chris, for checking that out.
If you pass that raw equal true parameter at the end, I posted a link, then that'll download it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kim. Okay, so the link in the PowerPoint will not be correct, but hopefully those of you on the call can download Kim's. So as I said, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. So it's about credentials and capabilities. Both are digital things. So next slide, both are digital things. They are bits and bytes. They're transmittable over any communications channel. And they both use cryptography to enhance security assurances. And you would use them to reliably enable enhanced services, i.e. authorization of particular actions or customization of features. So first up, verifiable credentials. Most of us on this call are very familiar with this. So anyone can make a verifiable statement about any subject. Next slide, on to slide 4. So these are good for digital use cases of traditional credentials. That's sort of the obvious low-hanging fruit. So let's make a digital passport or digital degree or digital license. So these are traditional formal authorities issuing hard-to-forge credentials. Now we can do that digitally. VCs, so slide 5, also allow anyone to make verifiable statements. So you could make invoices, you could do endorsements, receipts, prescription, wills, business cards, even notes from mom that a student or child needs to go to the doctor at this time on Tuesday, which, you know, I have forged in my youth. I think the statute of limitations has passed, but I don't think it's far-fetched to imagine your child going to school with their iPhone or their iPad and communicating something like that to a teacher. So VCs democratizes this ability to make hard-to-forge credentials. The key thing is, so next slide, they don't verify the truth of the statement, right? There is always an explicit narrator. So VCs never say, quote, the sky is blue. They're always of the form, Joe says the sky is blue, right? So this is useful for demonstrating slide 7 to a verifier, i.e. also known as a relying party sometimes, that an issuer, the source of the statement, has made a particular statement about a subject. In other words, the simplest way to think about verifiable credentials is that they are statements. Next slide, number 8. So what a verifier does with a VC is up to them. Do they trust the issuer for those particular statements? Do they trust that the presenter who's presenting that credential is legitimately related to the subject? They may be the subject, or they may be a guardian of the subject, or they may be the subject's administrative assistant without any paper trail, but they're just providing the VC as a matter of communicating some documentation that was never intended to be about the presenter. It's about the person who is the subject. So the verifier needs to make a decision about what privileges and services are appropriate for that presenter based on those statements. In other words, it's the verifier's own business logic that determines what they are willing to do in response to a particular statement from a given issuer about a certain subject presented digitally. Of course, that could be online or off, but the whole point is VCs are digital, so that's what we're trying to streamline. Okay, so that's the whirlwind recap of VCs. Most people on this call are familiar with those. So what I'm calling directed capabilities, in my talk I gave last month, I call these digital capabilities. So feedback on the naming here, I'm open to feedback. So these are based on object capabilities created back in 1966. They solve a lot of security problems where ACLs fail. And there are multiple ongoing efforts to apply modern cryptography and DLTs to enable a form of object capabilities that uses crypto and DLTs, which I'm calling directed capabilities as a generic term. So there is no clear standard yet. I'm most familiar, I think the next slide actually, 11, one of the approaches in this community is the ZCAPs. Which is a work item of the CCG, and it was developed by Digital Bazaar. And it can be packaged as signed JSON LD and invoked over any channel, or it could be evoked via signed HTTP headers. And I think this is an out of link URL, actually. This has moved on, I believe. I don't know if Dave or Manu might be able to get me the current link. Anyway, the HTTP signatures is advancing through that standardization process. And for those of you who are familiar with CHAPI, which is a credential handler API, also developed by Digital Bazaar and supported by our community, you can use ZCAPs through CHAPI. It's sort of what they were built for. Mm-hmm. But again, the rest of this talk is going to be about what I call directed capabilities, which is a generalization. And it should also apply to what we're going to be speaking about next week with the Lightning Network and Macaroons. So slide 12. Directed capabilities give the ability to perform privileged operations. So when you invoke a directed capability, the privileged operation should happen. They are created by the service at which they are later used. So this is a big topological difference from credentials. So credentials, they're issued by an issuer and they are given to someone else so that someone else can have confidence that the issuer actually said something. So it's important that they're different. With directed capabilities, the capability is issued by the same service at which they are invoked. They are directed in that they are secured cryptographically. So only those with appropriate keys can use. So in the issuing of a capability, you include, for example, a DID of the individual who has the authority to invoke that capability. and the process of invoking it proves current control over that DID. And this is in CCAPS, of course. Next week, we'll hear a little bit about how the Lightning and Macaroons does it maybe a little differently. Directed capabilities can be set up to enable revocation, delegation, and attenuation. You can also set them up so they're not revocable or they're not delegatable. Those are options. But the fact that you can do it is a key element of how capabilities work. And because they're digital things, they can be managed alongside verifiable credentials in digital wallets. So in theory, in your digital wallet, you'll have a mingling of both credentials that you would use at a verifier who is different than the issuer who gave you their credential, your driver's license, your passport, what have you. And you may also have capabilities that give you the ability to trigger action at the same service that issued it. So with directed capabilities, the privileges are explicit. And this is a big shift from the current authorization paradigms that use ACL user accounts in Linux and groups and such. The inspection of the capability can directly reveal what is invocable. It's extremely simple to view and audit what does this capability let me do. And then if a non-revoked capability is invoked, you can assume the action is performed. It's always possible that the issuer internally revoked it and nobody else knew it and they just ignored it. Or of course there could be a bug. You could try to execute the action and the service can be down. But the point is, if a good capability makes it to the service provider, they are going to allow the action to happen. And it's completely independent of traditional forms of digital identity, right? So, yeah, it's not related to usernames. It's not related to groups. You can manage capabilities with groups, but the underlying atomic manifestation of the authorization is an individual directed capability. And so the authorization decisions as to whether or not the service provider is going to execute that invocation are based on the capability's integrity, not some sort of contextual rules, like is the current user who's logged in also a member of some group? And that leads to these problems that we've just touched on a little bit because of the contextual rules. Ambient authority and ACLs have sort of known security flaws. Okay, so the canonical example here, I'm just going to go through real quickly. A physical car key is of a sort of a physical capability. It lets you open and start a car. It doesn't depend on the identity of the user. If the key fits, it just works. You can give the key to someone else directly, and you don't have to tell anyone about it. You don't have to register it with the DMV. You don't have to write it down on a book at home. You just give them the key. If they have the key, they can use it. And so directed capabilities are based on this sort of concept. So that car is, in fact, an embedded authorization to unlock the car doors, open the trunk, and start the car. In fact, in a court of law, if you accuse your child of stealing your car, but you had given them the keys, the judge will throw it out. Because, in fact, the fact that you gave them the key was an embodied authorization. Now, they may have gone and driven it in ways that you didn't want them to, but they didn't steal it. There was an initializing authorization. But what's interesting about car keys is that we have a good example of attenuation. Now, in this case, a valet key, so this is slide 15, is a type of an attenuated capability. It's still a physical capability, and it is related to the initial car key. But a valet key can open the car door and start the cars, but it can't access the trunk, and sometimes it can't access the glove compartment. So the point is this is attenuated, so you have a little bit of security on top of the normal capability. When we get digital, you'll see how that maps over. So next slide, 16. So directed capabilities are revocable. So if you gave your kid those car keys and now you want to take them back, you can do that digitally without actually having to go get the key and without having to physically rejigger your car, because you could change the car keys by having the locks replaced or reset. They're also delegatable. And they're delegatable losslessly, right? So if I have an extra car key, I can only give it to one person. I'd have to go down to the locksmith and have multiple made, which is a little expensive. But because this is digital, I can give it to someone else and I can revoke it, all at fairly low marginal cost. And thirdly, you can attenuate it in any number of actions, in any number of ways as allowed by the issuer. So I'll get to this in a little bit. The issuer gets to set up the framework under which you can attenuate and whether or not you can delegate. But the fact that I do it and who I give it to is completely under the user's control. So when I delegate it, I can fine tune it. So for, I think it's on 17. Nope. Okay. So 17 is more about that scope of capability from the issuer. So the issuer, when they create a directed capability, is going to specify the actions or the scope of that capability. And they will set up the rules for revocation, delegation, and attenuation. So if you want attenuation by time of day or day of week, you know, that's conceptually possible, but the issuer has to support it. And hopefully that's clear, and it might become clear in my example when I talk about the bank, which is an illustration later in the slides. However, once the issuer sets up the pattern, operational control is entirely under the capability holder. So when they use it, whether or not they delegate it, whether or not they revoke a delegation, and how they might attenuate it, it's all operationally under the control of the holder, and all that is verified by cryptographic signature. So this is sort of where the directed aspect of the capability works and why cryptography and why the Lightning provides sort of interesting new ways to do this. Okay, so let's look at that car key, but instead of a physical one, it's digital, it's a directed car key. Of course, it's delegatable. But now we can attenuate it potentially in more interesting ways, right? So the valet key, so no trunk access, great. But you might also want no engine starting. For example, if you're at the park and you want your kid to go get into the trunk, but you don't want him getting in the driver's seat and messing around. That was something I did as a kid. I remember releasing the parking brake and the car rolled into the street. The ability to attenuate in innovative ways can be particularly useful. And if it's encoded, you may be able to have limits on location. So the valet can't take the car on a joyride. Now, in order for that to work, obviously the car's system would need to know where it is. It would have to have some sort of GPS system or something like that. So you can't just make this up out of the blue. It has to be supported fundamentally at the system. And in most cases, you can do delegation without phoning home to the issuer. There are some architectures that, you know, you can architect it so that you have to phone home. But to me, the holy grail here is I can delegate this to anyone, and the burden is not on the issuer to participate in that. And they also don't explicitly have a permissioning role in that delegation. Slide 20, let's look at this in terms of banking. So imagine that the bank gives you a directed capability. I can delegate that to my bookkeeper, to my accountant, to my controller, to a creditor, all of those without them needing to have accounts at the bank. Today, when I give access to my bookkeeper and my controller, I literally had to go into the bank, create a username for them, and set up what permissions they had at the bank. So the bank had to build a system that managed my delegations. You could imagine possible attenuations. My bookkeeper, my accountant, perhaps get read-only. My controller, maybe they get the ability to cut a check but can't actually sign it. And my creditor, maybe they only get a range proof. Right? Maybe what they need to see is my average monthly deposits, or my average monthly balance or something like that. Those services would, again, have to be enabled by the bank. So the bank would have to encode a capability mechanism to respond to this query for a range proof, right? I can't just make it up on my own. The bank has to support it. And of course, either the bank or the account holder can revoke that at any time. The bank, since they're the issuer, they're also aware the capability is invoked. They can always say, nope, for whatever reason, we believe this account's been compromised. We're not going to recognize this capability. And of course, the account holder can revoke any of those attenuations. Another nice thing about directed capabilities, it's not in the slide, But if I delegate one of these capabilities to my accountant, he can delegate it to his assistant. So my accountant, you know, I could either delegate it to the firm or to my particular CPA. But often the things he does, he has an assistant do for him. So he can delegate that to his assistants. He could manage his assistants over the years of our relationship. And I don't need to be involved with that. So I could restrict it and say, no, you can't delegate it. But it's actually easier for me to let the CPA delegate to whomever he needs to get the job done effectively. And he can charge me less if he has a lower price person do the work. And a key factor here, it's also not on the slides, is that upon invocation, the entire chain of delegation is presented. So again, unlike sort of ACLs and typical usernames and groups, you could track in an audit trail exactly who authorized this transaction at the bank. And in the capability that authorized it, you can know which keys are in that delegation chain. You may not know the human being for each of those keys because that's sort of how cryptography works. But potentially, each person in the chain would know who they delegated it to by being able to identify those keys. So there's an audit trail baked in at every invocation that could be stored for future analytics or fraud detection or just bad actor detection. Okay, the almost final slide here, 21, credentials and capabilities. This is just a table breaking out sort of how I think about these two things that seems to have resonated and have some clarity. And Auric, if you could get on the queue to talk that up, I can answer that question later. So credentials, they're basically statements. You can present them anywhere. And it's the business rules of the verifier at the time of presentation that manages interpretation. For capabilities, they are triggers for action, and they can only be invoked at the issuer service. And the business rules are essentially set up at creation. Now, the business rules could change technically under the hood, but the delegatable mechanisms within the capability are constructed at the time of issuance. Both are revocable. Credentials are not really delegatable and attenuatable in any reasonable sense. I don't know what it means to delegate the statement that Joe says the sky is blue. That's just a statement. Joe said it. You could make a statement about a statement, which is another credential about a credential, but conceptually, I don't even understand what it might mean to delegate a credential. Whereas capabilities are both delegatable and attenuatable. They're built in. The semantics for that are happening. Chappie support, which really is digital wallet, those are the same things. And the best use for credentials are authoritative assertions and identity proofing. For example, providing that driver's license or that passport at the beginning of an account creation process, when you onboard and say, oh, this account we just created, we really do believe that it's Joe Andrew because he provided his birth certificate and driver's license and proof of address and all this stuff. Capabilities, on the other hand, really are ideal for authorizations and delegations. So once I'm bootstrapped into that system and identity proof and I have an account at some service, now the bank can provide me this mechanism to do interesting things in the banking service and let me delegate who gets to use it, how gets to use it, without them needing to be in the loop, without them needing to manage the accounts of all the people I might delegate to, or they might delegate to, right? My CPA's admin doesn't need a separate account at the bank, all those sorts of things. So this is the quick summary of credentials and capabilities. And that's the very fast run through of my presentation. And with that, we will move to questions. I saw one from Ori. I'm not sure who else might be on the queue. Okay, you are, Ori. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is an awesome presentation. Really excellent job. Very relevant. One of the things that I learned at IIW was that there's this concept of restricting delegation is tricky because in practice, once you give your keys to someone, you can't stop them from giving those keys to other people. And So I just wonder whether there has been any additional sort of knowledge or understanding or security mechanisms around restricting delegation since I initially learned about this at IIW.
Yes. So that is a phenomenal question because no keys are shared in the delegation of capabilities. So you could manifest the results of a form of delegation by giving someone your keys, right? You could get the same result. But when you delegate a capability, you're actually using your private keys to explicitly record in the delegation chain that some other individual is now authorized to invoke that delegated capability. And at any point, a different key holder with a different set of keys, right? So typically my did and I'm authorizing their did, and their did is, you know, has their keys in it, not my keys. And most importantly, when you do the delegation in something like ZCAPs, you know, I'm not sure how Lightning does it, but I expect there's a similar mechanism. I can simply state it's not delegatable. And then when the delegation chain is inspected by the issuer, who is the fundamental authority as to whether or not they're going to accept the capability or not, we'll simply see, in the third step in the process, it's clearly marked as non-delegatable, and that's signed by that third signature. And the fourth guy tried to delegate it, but the business logic is really evident. So this is an invalid delegation chain. Did that make sense, Ori?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think the thing is that when you see an invocation and it's coming from a key pair, you know, is it actually has someone transfer? So the use of key was confusing there. I meant car keys. Like, you can't stop someone from transferring car keys to someone else. And at the point at which an invocation happens, as long as it's cryptographically signed, it's going to be acceptable. So if you restrict delegation and say, this is not delegatable beyond this one person, but you receive an invocation from keys associated with that individual, you don't know whether that individual in turn shared those keys with somebody else to allow
So that sort of leads to my...
Go ahead, Chris, about the... I mean, if your keys are compromised, all bets are off, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I always hear this about capabilities or whatever as, you know, one of the first things. And the reality is that anybody can, you know, give you give their private keys or lose their private keys or whatever. So the reality is that's true today. I think the difference is that in the case of, you know, especially with persistent identities such as DIDs, that, you know, it's going to be against the interest of people to do that deliberately. I mean, we still have to deal with the issues of loss. But in the case of fraud and misuse, the fact that, you know, this is a persistent identity that you've created and you want to keep this relationship with the issuer means you're unlikely to give your private keys to someone else. Because that's exactly what happens today. You know, you give your wife your key, your password to the bank account, even though the bank account explicitly says you're not allowed to do that, or to your bookkeeper. I know a lot of people who don't bother setting up something with their bookkeeper. They just give them that entire, you know, their password. The advantage of capabilities is that it allows us to do what people want to do in ways that can be trusted. You know, some interesting things about this, although they are very similar to verifiable credentials in some of the details, you know, they're definitely not a verifiable credential. So, but it, you know, it's clear that, you know, all the work that we put into verifiable credentials to date and the data model, I think we can, you know, take it the step further for these directed capabilities. Also, another fact is that you can, you know, the directed capability may not be the only thing that you present in the same way that right now, you probably don't present solely a single verifiable credential. You do a verifiable presentation that includes a number of these. Well, in the same way, a verifiable presentation of capabilities might include other details such as that you paid, and then the thing we're going to talk about next week where you, that those can actually be atomically bound so that, you know, the payment doesn't happen until the, you know, the access is used, and the access can't be used until the payment is bound, and they're, you know, they're literally one operation that can't be separated. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Adrian, you have the floor.
Yes, so I'm seeking some clarity between these two aspects. So one of them is that it's only invoked at the issuer service, and the other one is that there's no phone home requirement. And the reason, the context in which I raise this is the Alice to Bob use case, where the issuer is Alice, but the capability is going to be exercised at Alice's service provider that she has chosen, you know, as the sort of processor, if you would. And I put in a link to this sort of four-way chain of agents that I use to describe the Alice to Bob use case. And what I'm saying is, and I don't expect an answer right now, but I just wanted to put it in the minutes, that we have a number of delegation steps in that four-agent scenario that I would hope we can map into the capabilities model. And that includes this very important one where Bob has a wallet, but Bob also has a client, and the client also has a wallet. The client is their employer. And so I'll just leave it at that. This issue of not phoning home is kind of what I'm trying to point to.
Okay, let me see what I can do in 2.5 minutes. So in your example, I think it's a slight misnomer that Alice is the issuer. I think the processor, as you called them, is the initial issuer. They issue a capability to Alice, which she delegates to Bob, and it sounds like maybe Bob delegates it further. The key of not phoning home is not in the invocation. So to use the capability, Bob has to go to that service. That's the whole point of the capability. But Alice didn't need to talk to the processor in order to delegate to Bob, and nor did Bob need to talk to Alice or the processor in order to delegate it further. So that's so the invocation is always a form of phoning home. It's a delegation and attenuation that doesn't need phoning home.
All right. I buy it.
Okay, cool. So thank you all for your attention and feedback and questions. Next week, we will be diving into how you might do this on the Lightning Network, which I find fascinating, and I wish I understood it better, so I will definitely be here next week. I don't think anyone else is on the queue. So with that, that's a wrap. Thank you all very much.